Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Is it 46?
Vyas adhyayar ishvare hagyayish Pushnein ad bhuta karmana Prabodhito pitihasayar Na buddhyata shucharpitaha Vyas adhyayar ishvare hagyayish Krishnin adbhuta karmana Prabodhito pitihasayar Na buddhyata shucharpitaha Vyasa adhyayi. By great sages headed by Vyasa. Ishwara, the Almighty God. Iha, by the will of. Gyayi, by the learned. Krishna, by Krishna himself. Adbhuta karmana, by one who performs all superhuman work. Prabodhitaha, being solaced. Api, although. Itihasai, by evidences from the histories. Na, not. Abudhyata, satisfied. Shucha arpitaha, distressed. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. King Yudhishthira, who was much aggrieved, could not be convinced, despite instructions by great sages headed by Vyasa and Lord Krishna himself, the performer of superhuman feats, and despite all historical evidence. Purport. The pious King Yudhishthira was mortified because of the massacre of human beings in the Battle of Kurukshetra, especially on his account. Duryodhan was there on the throne, and he was doing well in his administration. And in one sense, there was no need of fighting. But on the principle of justice, Yudhishthira was to replace him. The whole clique of politics centered around this point. And all the kings and residents of the whole world became involved in this fight between the rival brothers. Lord Krishna was also there on the side of King Yudhishthira. It is said in the Mahabharata, Adiparva, that 640 million men were killed in the 18 days of the Battle of Kurukshetra. I think Prabhupada once gave instruction to him that number is wrong. That's really 6,400,000. Either way, a lot of men died. And some hundreds of thousands were missing. Practically, this was the greatest battle in the world within 5,000 years. this mass killing simply to enthrone Maharaj Yudhishthira was too mortifying. So he tried to be convinced with evidences from histories by great sages like Vyas and the Lord himself that the fight was just because the cause was just. But Maharaja Yudhishthira would not be satisfied, even though he was instructed by the greatest personalities of the time. Krishna is designated here by the greatest personalities. I'm sorry, I skipped a little. Krishna is designated here as the performer of superhuman actions. But in this particular instance, neither he nor Vyas could convince King Yudhishthira. Does it mean that he failed to be a superhuman actor? No, certainly not. The interpretation is that the Lord as Ishvara, or the supersoul in the heart of both King Yudhishthira and Vyasa, performed still more superhuman action because the Lord desired it. As supersoul of King Yudhishthira, he did not allow the king to be convinced by the words of Vyasa and others, including himself, because he desired that the king hear instructions from the dying Bhishma Deva, who was another great devotee of the Lord. The Lord wanted that at the last stage of his material existence, the great warrior Bhishma Deva see him personally and see his beloved grandchildren, King Yudhishthira, etc., now situated on the throne, and thus pass away very peacefully. Bhishma Deva was not at all satisfied to fight against the Pandavas, who were his beloved fatherless grandchildren. But the Kshatriyas are also very stern people, and therefore he was obliged to take the side of Duryodhana because he was maintained at the expense of Duryodhana. Besides this, the Lord also desired that King Yudhishthira be pacified by the words of Bhishma Deva, so that the world could see that Bhishma Deva excelled all in knowledge, including the Lord himself. This is recorded in the Mahabharata, these events, in the Shanti Parva and the Anushasana Parva. Shanti means the peace after the war. Anushasana means the detailed instructions given by Bhishma Deva to Yudhishthira. Arjuna had his moment of doubt before the battle. Yudhishthira had a similar crisis after the battle. He blamed himself for the slaughter and just could not reconcile himself with the idea of accepting the throne, which was a political problem. The fight was fought to get him on the throne, and now he's refusing it. There's practically no one else left who could occupy the throne. They've all been killed. So everybody feels, except for Yudhishthira, that he's got to accept the throne, and he feels, you know, he sticks first of all to the principles of what he understands as dharma. And what everybody else says, he'll reject if it doesn't agree with his understanding of dharma. That's him, he's attached to dharma. Even Krishna, even Vyasadeva, have an opinion that he should accept the throne. He cannot be convinced by that because he thinks it's not proper. He'll refuse even Krishna if he thinks it's not proper. Krishna, during the battle, wanted him to lie just to manage a way to kill Dronacharya. Dronacharya could not be defeated. This is back in the Drona Parva, when Drona was the head of the army after Bhishma was killed. So Krishna had a scheme that if we tell him that his son Ashwatthama has been killed, even if it's not true, he'll lose all his enthusiasm. He's only fighting for the sake of his son. another material attachment. So Yudhishthira, you please, Krishna asked him, tell him that Ashwatthama is dead. Krishna was asking him, the absolute authority, and Yudhishthira is a pure devotee of Krishna. A pure devotee doesn't refuse the desire of the Lord. But Krishna on the outside was asking Yudhishthira, do this. And Prabhupada explains that Krishna, the even more superhuman than the heroic things he does is how, as the super soul, he makes the devotees do what seems like what he doesn't want done. He enters as a super soul. He convinces the devotee to disobey him, and he did this with Yudhishthira. We can't say that Yudhishthira is just in Maya. He's a pure devotee. He's an eternal associate of Krishna. So we have to reason that there must be something other explanation. And that explanation Prabhupada gives here. Krishna, as the super soul, convinced Yudhishthira before not to listen to Krishna. And now it's happening again after the battle. Because Yudhishthira refused or hesitated, even just hesitated, to tell a lie. Because of his adherence to Dharma, but his devotion to Krishna should have overruled that. But this is Yogamaya and the super soul influencing him to apparently disobey Krishna and hesitate to tell the lie. It's part of the pastime. Ultimately, it's arrangement of Krishna's internal potency, Yogamaya, who arranges Krishna's pastimes. It's the pastime that Yudhishthira hesitated. And then Krishna had to come up with a scheme. Okay, Bhima, it was Bhima who had the intelligence given to him by Krishna. That, okay, Yudhishthira, you don't want to tell a lie. Let me go, I'll kill this elephant, his name is Ashwatthama. And then you can say it. So Bhima did that, he smashed in the head of the elephant. And Yudhishthira announced on the battlefield within the hearing of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama hota gaja iti. Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. And Drona took it to mean that his son had been just killed. So he just lost all his enthusiasm and threw his weapons aside. Just like Arjun threw his weapon, his bow aside, and sat down on the chariot. So Dronacharya sat down with the intention of leaving his body, and he did it. By yogic power, he left his body. And when who killed him? Jishajumna, who was fated to kill him, struck him with the sword. He was already dead. He had already left his body by yogic power. Yudhishthira hesitated to tell a lie on Krishna's request. After that, his chariot wheels, which never touched the ground, began to touch the ground. Some say that is because he lied. We understand, as explained by our acharyas, it's because he hesitated to do what Krishna wanted him to do. He came down to earth. Now he's suffering a similar arrangement, again by Yogamaya, as Prabhupada does explain here, or by the super soul's arrangement. He's not being convinced even by Krishna and Vyasadeva to simply do his duty and take the throne that the battle was fought for. So he ends up going to Bhishmadeva. It's not just these two, Krishna and Bhishmadeva, Krishna and Vyas. It's described in the Shanti Parva how everybody tried to convince him. His brothers, each one of his brothers, his wife, other sages, everybody tried. A lot of people tried to with various different arguments. Prabhupada only presents one of the arguments here, that the battle was just. But there were many other arguments presented by all the different persons who attempted to change Yudhishthira's mind, and nothing anybody said. This went on for about 40 chapters in the Mahabharata, one after another. trying to argue with Yudhishthira and change his mind. It's quite a dramatic episode. It goes on and on. Nobody can convince him. Finally, the idea was presented, let's go see Bhishma Dev and see what he says. So Bhishma Dev gets the opportunity to speak to Yudhishthira on all sorts of principles of religion. Bhishma Dev is an expert on dharma. Yudhishthira is a kshatriya. Bhishma is a kshatriya. But the kshatriyas, if there's a shastra that they're expert in, it's going to be the dharma shastra. Or more particularly, the sub-branch of the dharma shastra called artha shastra. The dharma shastras, per se, are written for brahmanas by great sages. Manu wrote his Manu Smriti, Manu Samhita, and there are 57 other standard dharma shastras written by all different sages, including Narada, Yajnavalkya, Drumila, many other dharma shastras. And they're meant, some of them, for different ages, different circumstances. So they give slightly different instructions according to circumstance and time. But elaborately, each dharma shastra gives a whole outline of the rules of behavior for each of the different classes of the human race and what to do in various kinds of situations. In the Manusmriti, there's even traffic laws. You know, if you're riding your chariot on the road and you bump into another chariot, whose fault is it? It's determined by the instructions that the principles that Manu gives there in that chapter of the Dharma Shastra, Manu Smriti. The Kshatriyas, the Brahmanas, studied Dharma Shastras, some of them, because they want to maintain Dharma. There is the spiritual Dharma, the Atma Dharma of the Vaishnav cult. But on the lower level, there is Varnashrama Dharma for the rest of society, how to behave like civilized human beings. Just like a complex machine comes with an instruction book, a manual. So the Dharma Shastra is the manual for the human body, how to live like a human being in various situations, in various positions of life. The different varnas and ashramas, different privileges and responsibilities for each varna and each ashram. These are in detail explained in the Dharma Shastras. The Brahmins study the Dharma Shastras because it's their duty and their interest to protect Dharma by teaching it, by knowing it from the Shastra and teaching those principles and guiding others in following those principles. The Brahmanas are primarily interested in the maintenance of Dharma. Well, so are the Kshatriyas. Their duty also is to maintain the principles of Dharma. But the way they do it is different. The Brahmins do it by teaching. The Kshatriyas do it by fighting, by use of force. They maintain the principles of Dharma. They're working together, but they're each using different means. The Brahmins and the Kshatriyas. So the Kshatriyas, they are also interested in the principles of Dharma, but they have a special subcategory of the Dharma Shastras called the Artha Shastras that suits their interest, because they're not interested so much in all the, you know, the philosophical aspects. They're interested in the practical aspects. The Brahmana is concerned, how can we engage everybody properly according to their duty? What is the duty of human being and different kinds of human beings? The Kshatriya, his first concern is, how do I get power and how do I keep it? Because without that power, he can't help maintain the principles of religion. And a Kshatriya may have other motives also. He may be ambitious to have power just for its own sake. So the Artha Shastras teach basically the same principles as the original Dharma Shastras, but with a slant that suits the Kshatriyas. The Artha Shastras focus on the duties of a Kshatriya, not just the duty, you know, The Kshatriyas don't have to study what are the duties of the Brahmins, of a Brahmachari. They focus on what are the duties of a king and how does a king get power and maintain it. So the Dharmic principles are presented with that special focus for the Kshatriyas in the Arthashastras. We only have one major Arthashastra existing nowadays, and that's the one compiled by Janakamuni. But there were others. What Bhishma Dev spoke to Yudhishthira, although I haven't read it, I don't even exactly know the contents of what actually all the things Bhishma Dev told Yudhishthira. I can't pretend that I know. It goes on for that part. The actual instructions by Bhishma Dev goes on for 350 or 360 chapters, which is longer than the whole Bhagavatam. Not really, not as many verses, because some of the chapters are short. But 360 chapters of instructions from Bhishma Dev to Yudhishthira. In part of it in the Shanti Parva, and it continues into the whole Anushasana Parva. And Bhishma Dev is giving, in effect, his own version of the Arthashastra. The instructions how a king should do his job. Everything about the business of a king. This is Bhishma Dev's Arthashastra in the Mahabharata. But it's an up-to-date. It's not an ancient version. It's the current version for 5,000 years ago. So in the Dharma Shastras, and even more so in the Artha Shastras, what are taught are material principles, material religion. The Dharma Shastras don't focus on the transcendental principles of pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. That is found elsewhere. It's not that the Dharma Shastras deny that there are higher principles, but it's a book written for people who want to know about the material principles. Those who want to know about the transcendental principles of devotional life, there's elsewhere to go, like the Bhagavatam and a few other books. So the Bhagavatam and the Dharma Shastras are in cooperation. They're not presenting conflicting worldviews, but they're focusing on different areas. Proof of this, if we accept the historical account, Manu, who wrote the Manusmriti, which is full of mundane instructions, material instructions, how to be civilized, but not instructions how to be a pure devotee, not even instructions how to be a mixed devotee. There's some mention of how, in the beginning, of how Lord Vishnu created the universe. In the very beginning, first chapter, there's some short account. So there, you can consider that some devotional meditation, something about the creation. And then there's a statement in the second chapter of the Manusmriti. Pravittir esha bhutanam nivrityas tu mahapala. That all these things we're going to talk about, these are the manifestations of the material propensities of human beings. Pravitti. But nivrityas tu mahapala. What will give one the highest success in life is actually to go the other direction and disentangle oneself from all these material concerns. Nivritti to Mahapala. He says that, but then he goes on and presents 20 chapters of all Pravritti Mark. So this is a pure devotee. The Bhagavatam presents the same author, Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, as a pure Vaishnava. Although he was a king and a grihastha, we hear in the Bhagavatam, every day he found some time, even in his busy schedule, he found some time to seriously hear about the pastimes and the glories of the personality of Godhead. Every day, as a grihastha, he engaged in sankirtan, especially hearing. He would probably have Brahmins recite to him. From the Bhagavatam or where else, he would hear every day about Krishna's glories. And then he went back to Godhead. That is told to us in the Bhagavatam. If we accept the Bhagavatam as speaking the facts and not making up stories, then this same person who wrote the material textbook on laws of human society, he's a pure devotee. It's a pure devotee presenting material knowledge. But pure devotees sometimes have to fulfill that function. Pure devotees prefer to just be spiritual masters guiding their disciples into the pure devotional service of Krishna. But not every pure devotee gets the privilege of doing that. You know, not every pure devotee acts as a Vaishnava guru. Some of them act as karmakanda gurus, as material gurus, giving material instructions to material disciples. So Manu accepted that role. Even though he's a pure devotee and he's also one of the 12 Mahajans' standard authorities on devotional service, his major book, his major literary contribution, is a material book about the Dharma Shastra. Similarly, Bhishma Dev, he's another pure devotee. Definitely. Prabhupada tells us that when he left his body, he went back to Vaikuntha, to a special planet ruled by Lord Parthasarathi. And there he always sees Krishna with Arjuna on his chariot. Krishna on the earth only, you know, rode on that chariot for 18 days. But Yudhishthira has the association of Parthasarathi in that form eternally in Vaikuntha. There is such a place. So he's a pure devotee. He went back to Godhead also. Here he's giving also material instructions. I don't know actually what he said. I didn't read it yet. I may never have time to read those 360 chapters. You know, I'm focusing on Bhagavatam. I've given up pretty much reading a lot of other books. When I was younger, I thought I'd read so many books. Now I know I don't have much time. So I'm focusing on Bhagavatam. So I may never read that. Someone else can read it. Tell me what's there. Bhishma Dev also gave a lot of material instructions. Same kind of Dharma Shastra, but especially for a king. A lot of it. You know, Manusmriti is only 20 chapters, although the chapters are a few hundred verses each. But Bhishma Dev spoke 360 chapters. Some of them are only 12 verses each. 40 verses, something like that, between 12 and 40 verses, sometimes 100 verses. But, you know, a lot he spoke on mundane topics. But he's a pure devotee. Yudhishthira, who listened, was also a pure devotee. This is all part of Krishna's pastimes. Arjuna heard the Bhagavad Gita, which is transcendental instruction. Yudhishthira similarly heard, but he heard not from Krishna, but from a devotee of Krishna, but what he heard was material. But those material instructions enthused him, enlightened him, and inspired him to do his service and accept the throne. Even after Krishna, with everything he thought of to say, and Vyasadeva couldn't convince Yudhishthira. We read here in this canto, first canto, about a little bit of a short outline of the kind of things that Bhishma Dev told him about the duties of kings, the duties of women, because the kings have to manage everybody, including half of the people they manage are women. So a king has to know about the duties of women, the duties of renunciation, because there are also Brahmins and sages in his kingdom. He has to manage, or at least protect them also. They don't need to be managed, but they need to be protected. So he has to understand the duties of sages and brahmanas in order to help protect them. He has to know so many things. So it's outlined in two verses what kind of things Bhishma Dev spoke to Yudhishthira. There's nothing on the list about pure devotional service, which is okay. Bhishma Dev is a pure devotee, no doubt. But Yudhishthira is also an eternal associate of Krishna. He doesn't need to hear the Bhagavad Gita. or the kind that was that level of instructions. He already knows all that. He's living it. He's been living it forever. So he doesn't need to be enlightened in pure devotion. So anyway, it's the pastime. That Bhishma Dev will so-called enlighten Yudhishthira by giving him these instructions on politics, on how to rule. It's part of the pastime. Okay, so are there any questions or comments? Damodar Gopal? Okay, sorry again.
In the case of Maharaj Yudhishthira, we can see that Krishna, he inspired him to act contrary to his instructions.
Yes.
And in our case, we may also sometimes act
contrary to Krishna's instructions.
Contrary to Krishna's instructions and the spiritual master. So how to distinguish in these two cases? Is it Yoga Maya in our case,
well,
or Moha Maya?
I think you can only justify it if you're experiencing rasa. It's an ecstasy. You know, this pastime of disobeying Krishna, apparently, because as super soul or somehow he's inspiring you to do something else. But that's on the level of rasa. So you can excuse yourself if you can honestly say that you're experiencing rasa. You know, and this is one of your ecstasies. If not, if you're not on that ecstatic platform, you don't have the excuse. You better not disobey Krishna's instructions under any circumstances. Of course, you can go to the spiritual master for clarification. You think that Krishna's telling you something. Spiritual master say, no, he's not telling you something. You don't understand the circumstances. Okay, the spiritual master can modify. But we shouldn't take the liberty of assuming I'm a Krishna's devotee, therefore I can externally disobey him or externally disobey my spiritual master. Unless you're on that level of you know, prema, then maybe you can get away with it.
Also in case of Dronacharya, son Ashwatthama, when Krishna told to kill Ashwatthama, Arjuna disobeyed him externally.
Arjuna disobeyed?
Yeah.
You mean Yudhishthira?
He didn't kill Ashwatthama.
Arjuna was supposed to kill Ashwatthama? Yeah. Back then. In the 7th chapter, yeah. Okay, yes. This is Arjuna as an intimate associate of Krishna apparently disobeying him. It's actually a very vivid example. Krishna is telling him very explicitly, and it's being confirmed by Bhima, you know, that no, we have to kill him, and he refuses to kill. That's showing how great a devotee Arjuna is. We can't imitate that. Yes?
I have a few questions, but before I thought of something. There's a pastime when during Prabhupada's time, this devotee, he was chanting japa somewhere in Mayapur, and Prabhupada was criticizing him, that his own disciple, and telling him, no, don't try to imitate Haridas Thakur.
Yes.
This devotee from Africa was trying to do that.
Yes.
Prabhupada was not approving. And then one of his godbrothers was saying, so, well, isn't Prabhupada disapproving what you're doing, so why are you continuing? He says, no. This instruction is for others. I actually have a very intimate relationship with Srila Prabhupada.
And what happened to that devotee?
6 months later, he was seen by some devotees working in a gas station or something.
I think you may have mixed up devotees here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. That was someone else in the gas station. But yeah, okay. Yeah. But he left soon.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I know.
Thank you very much for your class. How is relevant to us the Mahabharata and the Dharma Shastra, and especially in establishing Varnashram Dharma? And then I'll give an example of this. Well, I think this question is important because one devotee, I remember hearing, he was lecturing from some verses of the Mahabharata.
Yeah.
And was, you know, very nice points he was saying about his reasoning was that, well, it's good for us to hear this because we don't always act on the pure devotional platform, and if I understood properly, and we have to be and to live in this world nicely, it's nice to have some good moral principles. And the class he gave was very relevant and very helpful, I found, in our dealings amongst even Vaishnavas.
Okay.
And I'll give an example of what he said. He was quoting from Bhishma, his class, and he was saying that he says that the control of speech, if you just have to say nonsense, then don't say anything. Then higher than that is to speak the truth. Higher than that is speak sweetly. And higher than that is to speak the absolute truth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was that a Bhagavatam class or some other class?
No, some other.
Okay, see, if during Bhagavatam class we should stay on the level of Bhagavatam. We should avoid descending into mundane discussions during the Bhagavatam class. Devotees do that sometimes. They, in the name of giving examples, they go way off, and you know, it's not even on the transcendental level anymore. Just talking about whatever's on their head. That's not good. It should stay on the highest level, the discussion in the Bhagavatam. But oh yeah, we could have a class in the afternoon. Some will invite an expert on Dharma Shastra to explain us these things. They're interesting. They're useful to know, not just interesting. Prabhupada gave us instructions from Chanaka Rishi, Chanaka Pandit, which were mundane instructions. That you know, there's no difference between a useless son and Mutra. Putra and Mutra are the same if he's not a pundit. So that's not a spiritual principle, but it's practical to know that a son who is not learned is as good as urine. You know, urine and the sun both come from the same place. Yeah. So Prabhupada talked about these things, but in the proper context. You know, Prabhupada could get away with, you know, we can do it, even insert such things in a Bhagavatam class, but we have to keep the focus. Now, as far as devotees studying and teaching these shastras, let's say about our devotees, you know, in our school, I wanted to make the focus Srimad Bhagavatam. And then in this three-year program, we stick to Bhagavatam. But the idea is to train up devotees so they can go on and study other books if it's appropriate service. It could be appropriate to study the Dharma Shastras or some other literature, maybe for some devotees. You know, it's a specialty. It's probably useful for ISKCON in the future that someone is a specialist in the Manusmriti or the Dharma Shastras. But that should be planned out in an organized way, and it should be authorized. And it should be, you know, just for specialization for a specific purpose. We don't need that we all, you know, we all learn the Dharma Shastra. It's not needed. Someone can learn it and become an expert in it. There was one letter from a Mataji who thought that, you know, we should study Manusmriti to organize our Varnashram the way Prabhupada wanted to. She wrote to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada says, you read the Manusmriti and you'll go to hell. That was his answer to her. Not because he denied the authority of the Manusmriti or that we should never consult it, but it wasn't appropriate for that Mataji to study it. You know, her idea wasn't appropriate, so he scared her away from it. Prabhupada also at other times told us, Manusmriti is the law book for mankind. So, you know, we do take it as authority. And we probably should consult it in organizing for Varnashram. But someone who's an authorized specialist on it should do it. Yes. We can work, you know, at the graduate level of training up specialists in Dharma Shastra and maybe other Shastras. Somebody might want to study the Vedas. But, you know, I don't think we should have a big department of Vedic studies. It's not our major focus. Our focus is not the Vedas, but the Bhagavatam.
So on the same subject, like we learn from the Atma Rama verse that anybody, even animals, they can perform devotional service and be like pure devotees.
Even animals, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Anuman or so in one sense, we cannot be most civilized. So like, for example, we take to devotional service. Most of us, we're not very from a very civilized background, where you're considered barbarians, actually, civilization.
Yes.
But we see that, because of this baggage, it seems that maybe we're not able to perform devotional service properly.
Sometimes we backslide.
Yeah.
Perform for a while and then go back to being a barbarian.
Yeah. And it seems that that's why Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram Dharma, at least is a nice background. And we see that devotees, they struggle. I mean, unless they go to extra purification, which is rare.
Yeah.
But most, it seems like lots of divorce and all that. But this disturbs the devotional service.
The first recommended path is to take with all enthusiasm to pure devotional service without deviation, without interruption, and preach vigorously. Dedicate yourself to the preaching mission. Then you might not, even though you were born a barbarian, you might transcend it and never go back to it again. And if you see that you're slipping, or that you're still a barbarian, even after so many years, then we need Varnashram principles to help us. Then we have to be told what a Brahmin behaves like. Someone who's transcendentally situated, whose only interest is to hear and chant and to preach, he doesn't have to be told how to behave like a Brahmin. He's already acting like a Paramahamsa. But someone who's has problems doing that perfectly, he's got to be told. A Brahmin doesn't put his finger in his mouth, because he's always doing it. He's sticking his finger in his mouth or doing something else because he hasn't given up his barbarity completely. So he has to be told, don't do that, do this. For them, Varnashram Dharma Shastra is required, even devotees. But those devotees who are completely dedicated to just hearing and chanting and preaching, they probably don't have to be instructed in those things.
So is it like you try to give people the highest, but if they're not able to take it, then okay, take this. Okay, you're not able to, okay, take this. Then okay, take this.
Yeah, for us it's like a mix. We should all be studying Bhagavatam. Some of us are studying Bhagavatam and chanting our rounds with great intense enthusiasm and attention. And others are doing it half-heartedly or different degrees. So it's a matter of degrees, mixture. Some of us need some material principles, and some need more than others. Let's say most of us need, we have rules and regulations and we have to be serious about them. And we even have mundane rules. Don't put your finger in your mouth. If the temple president sees a bhakta with his finger in his mouth, he tells him, don't do it. Even though that's not a transcendental principle. Okay. I just wanted to make a simple announcement that on the Wednesdays when I give Bhagavatam class, I don't give the Tika class. Okay, so I won't give Tika class today. Or I won't give my second class the day that I give Bhagavatam class. Okay. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.